Yes, there's nothing I like better than the peal of bells. But imagine if that sound had become menacing. That's the premise of a new novel from the New Zealand poet and musician Anna Smale. In her new book, every day the ruling class erases the memories of the populace by playing music on a carillon. That's a kind of bell tower. And this music of bells hypnotises and controls people. Now, this dystopian world where all this is happening is recognisably London, but some things have changed. There's no written language, so all memories, all histories are, well, inscribed on bodies and on objects. From Wellington in New Zealand, the author, Anna Smale, is speaking to Kate Evans.
Anna Smale, congratulations on the Chimes.
Thank you, thank you.
Your narrator, Simon, can you introduce us to Simon and what he's carrying?
Simon, he's sort of an everyman figure, I suppose. He's sort of 15, 16. He's abandoned, he's an orphan, and he's travelling by himself into London. And yes, he has this bag, and in it is basically his life, his memories. And he's a watcher, he's a thinker, he's somebody who actually is quite linguistic and who's aware of language and aware of sort of sound interplays in language. You know, we can't tell necessarily because he's the narrator, but, you know, and he's the only sort of access we have to reality. But his way of putting together words, I sort of thought of that as quite unique to him. He tends to combine descriptions, so you've got sort of compound words, portmanteau words, like river mark and colours which get pushed together. He's somebody who I think moves in language naturally, but then he doesn't have the written word, he doesn't have the ability to sort of see that as part of his world.
So Simon comes to London, this strange world full of sounds and memories that are then erased every day, and he meets a band of other young people.
That's
people
right.
Who, how would you describe them? They sort of live on the edge.
Yeah, well, I saw them as other orphans because, you know, it's obviously a world in which, I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, there's quite a high rate of mortality. Early death is not unusual. You know, these are, I guess, kids essentially who are on the edges of society, definitely. They haven't taken apprenticeships. So there's a sort of a guild system. It's very sort of pre-modern, and they're kids or young adults who haven't sort of fit into the structure of society. Their function in society, I suppose, is as sort of salvagers of this rare metal palladium, which is a sort of a key part of the economic structure that the world is built upon. So their ability is they have better hearing, slightly better memory maybe for music. And as a reader will find out, those two factors are crucial to successfully finding palladium, or the Pale Lady, as they call it, in the tunnels underneath the Thames in London.
What are the Chimes as a sound? What do they do?
That's a really good question, because I think a lot of the way I built the idea of the Chimes, it started off as quite an abstract concept. Obviously, it's sort of based on the idea of the actual instrument, the carillon or the carillon, as we tend to say in New Zealand. But it was sort of a mashup between that instrument, and I had a very strong idea of an organ sound. So I guess the sort of the pipes are, hence, you know, the pipes are instrumental to the organ. You know, the crucial element of it is that it also involves infrasound. So there's subsonic vibrations that the instrument generates, and you know that's a crucial part of its effect on the populace. So I tend to think of it as it's sort of beyond description. It's sort of beyond words, which is sort of the point of the book, I guess.
So we're in a world in which these chimes sound out at a particular point in the day and have an impact on the people. But it takes a while as a reader to work this out. We're not sure of the rules of the world.
Yes.
What did you grapple with as a writer, working out how much to spell out and how much to leave to our imagination as readers?
Well, it was a really interesting process writing the novel. It was my first novel, and I think my experience as a writer was actually very similar to Simon's experience as a narrator, and probably to the reader's experience. I had this very strong conviction of the shape of the novel and the movements that the novel needed to go through, the rhythms, I guess. And I knew the plot, but revealing the information in a way that made sense and that allowed the story to be told was something that actually gradually revealed itself to me. So I was sort of learning the rules as I went along, and I sort of set myself a very difficult task of creating a first person narrator who doesn't have short term memory or has very limited short term memory. So he's thinking in the present tense, and yet I had to reveal backstory, and I had to allow forward movement to take place, so it couldn't just be, you know, him repeating the same day over and over again, which, you know, was essentially his life. So I've tried to reconcile those two things, I suppose, and I tried to kind of capture the intensity of living in a moment, which you almost can't escape from, sort of a present day.
So, Anna, there's a lot going on there. You mentioned memory, and I'd like to get to that a bit later, but if we can just stick with the world that you've created, it's sort of London, but it's defined by sound and music. Why did you start with the sound of the world? Is it because you're a musician?
I think definitely that's where the sort of first germs and seeds of the idea came to me from. Like, I have had a very intense and ongoing relationship with music. So the essence of the idea was quite personal, I suppose, and quite autobiographical, based on, I suppose, quite a love-hate relationship with music and my own background as a violinist and coming to terms with whether that was going to be my vocation, you know, whether I was going to pursue that as a career. So that's definitely where the idea of it came from. But I was living in London when I had the idea for the book as a sort of a concerted whole. And those two things sort of came together in quite a natural way. I think the soundscape of a city is very much part of my experience of a city. And when you're living in a city, you're not necessarily being analytical about it. You sort of take this reading or impression of the city, I suppose, to me, that it always shaped how I'd experienced London as well. So sort of part reality, part autobiography at that time.
Because this is another world in almost a dystopian future. And so the way that the music defines the space is through, for example, every trade has its own signature tune.
Yes.
So given that you and I know the book, but the listeners don't, can you just explain how music defines the space of the city?
I sort of had this idea of a musical language, and there are actually a few extant musical languages out there, but I suppose the idea for things like trade songs, in part they're based a little on the fact that, you know, traders in markets, pre-industrial, even now, use sound to capture buyers. And I think another influence was Bruce Chatwin's Songlines, where he describes Aboriginal myth, sort of creation myth, in which, you know, Australia is sung into being by the different gods. I believe I may have that slightly wrong, and I'm not sure if Chatwin was entirely accurate in his perception either, but it made an impression on me. I thought this is an amazing idea. So I think it was a variety of confluences, different ideas that came to me and sort of blended together, and I hope in a convincing way.
So, Anna, you've taken these conceptual arguments or concerns of yours and turned it into what's a very compelling and slightly strange novel. It is a futuristic world. There are traces of the world that we know now. But how would you describe your book as a genre? Where do you place it?
Tell you the truth, I did not really think about this a great deal while I was writing it. And actually, when I was writing the novel, I thought I was writing a young adult novel, and I think in part it is a young adult novel. I wrote it, I think, in some way for my younger self, you know, emotionally. But I think I was also writing very much in the influence of Russell Hoban's amazing dystopian novel, Ridley Walker, which is a book in a similar vein that's sort of a future that has returned to a kind of pre-modern England. And to me, that book, it sort of transcends genre. It's sci-fi, it's dystopian, but it's, to my mind, high literary fiction. It's brilliantly and poetically written, and it touches, you know, on sort of really elemental mythic qualities. So I think that kind of liberated me from thinking about genre. I didn't feel as though I was writing a sci-fi novel, or, I mean, obviously I knew that it was a dystopia, it's pretty clear, but I didn't really think about, as you know, in terms of a genre. I think genre is a tool, and I don't think it should ever be used to narrow or limit. I think, you know, we can keep it as open as possible, and I think there's so much confluence between, you know, literary fiction and genre fiction.
Do you see it as ultimately bleak or hopeful?
I see it as hopeful. I mean, the arc of the narrative is, I think, hopeful. I think it's not an easy ending, partly because there is work to do, and it's not a sort of a finite, you know, moment of triumph. But I didn't really want to create a world in which things would sort of be black and white, and which would be easy.
Anna Smale's novel The Chimes is published by Scepter. She was speaking there to Kate Evans.